AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Sullivan, and with me, as always, this time in the what I would consider enemies' colors, Kevin Trussler. Kevin, I'm not as excited to see you as I have been in the past.
You should be, because, we came, we delivered, we kicked some ass, even though it was overtime. We just wanted to give, the world an extra period to watch hockey. Proud of the boys. Canada, sing it loud, sing it proud.
For those of you that can't see, you're lucky. And for those of you that can, he's wearing his Team Canada shirt, his Canada hat. He's got the maple syrup glisten going on. He's just all of the above. And you heard the laugh when we cut the intro. Our guest is with us to start the show today. Former Nest guest and current Nest guest, Sammy Terho. Sammy of Swedish and Finnish lineage. So he had
US and he US. Had three ponies in the race, you know.
And he lost all three, didn't he? So, Sammy Terho, welcome back to the Nest, buddy.
Thank you guys again for having me. Thanks for having me. And yeah, results-wise, a little disappointing. I've always had this thing with the Sweden-Finland thing. We talked about that, right? It's my family's from Finland. I grew up in Sweden. And when I grew up, going into Olympics or World Championships, everybody wanted me to pick a team. And I always said, like, ask me tomorrow after the game. You want as many ponies as you can. And this particular one, I said, like, look, this is ABC for me, like anyone but Canada.
That is gold. That is gold.
Well, it didn't work out that way.
It didn't work at all.
Nah.
But Sammy, I'm curious as to your thoughts. You know, Kevin and I broke it down prior to the tournament, and then right in the middle, right before actually the final, we did a show. But before the tournament started, I said that Sweden and Finland were both out. Kind of looking at on the rosters on paper, I didn't give either one a chance. Now, Finland, I knew, was out. Like, I expected Finland to finish fourth. They did. I don't think they were outclassed in the tournament, but they just couldn't put a full 60-minute effort together. They didn't have the depth like everyone else had. Sweden, Kevin made a great point before, and I'm going to totally steal this from you, Kevin. Sweden didn't lose in regulation in that whole tournament. So
they did not.
Knowing the teams better than us, having that connection, what was missing from the European game in this tournament that the North American game just outplayed them?
Well, first of all, depth, right? If you put the best Swedish players on the ice, they can compete with anyone. You miss one or two. You look at the Canadian team when you have, and I'm a Tampa Bay Lightning fan, right? And you have Braden Point, like Cirelli and Hagel on the fourth line. A Swedish Finnish team doesn't have a fourth line like that. And you can pick another, six players for Canada that can play that fourth line role that will usually be first line in every team they play on. When you got countries like Finland with 5 million people, and you can produce this many NHL players is fantastic, but there's only so many, and then you start running out of them. And Finland missed, what, three top defensemen? Like Heskinen wasn't there from Dallas?
Correct, yes.
And who else? There was a few missing. You run out, right? What they do really well, though, they play as a team. And they play the same structure in their national teams, no matter where or not where. I know it doesn't mean a lot to you, but the World Championships that always happens in May, Finland wins once out of like 20 years. The other year, they ended up winning with like one NHLer. The rest were all from the Finnish league. But they got there with a clear mission. They played the right way, and it played as a team. That's what they bring to the table. And this year, well, they just didn't have enough, right, of those high-end players. Sweden, more depth. You're right. They lost no game, right? And two of them are OT losses. You win one of those, they would have been in the final.
Correct.
That's how close it was, right? Takeaway for me, and I'll throw that out early, right? The biggest takeaway for me from this tournament was that I didn't know if this is going to be more of an all-star thing, where, okay, instead of an all-star game, we get the best, and we're going to screw around a little bit. Not so much.
Not so much at all.
Not so much. I mean, yes, the US-Canada game, like, you get Hagel start in the first fight, right? Clearly, there was a lot of feelings into it. That Sweden-Canada game, who was it? Was it Drew Doughty? He
Now,
said that was the fastest game he's ever played.
well, and hey,
Was it?
no, talking about like physicality, Theodore got
Well,
hurt
that was.
in a clean, like it was a physical, hard played game. For it to be the first game of the tournament, I think it set the tone.
Was that in a Sweden game?
The Sweden Canada game.
Okay. All right. I missed that detail, I guess. But just looking at the game, how, like, the skill level, the speed, and it goes OT. I mean, it's all you can ask for, right? It was an amazing game. Got a US beating Finland big. That was the only lopsided game all tourney, right?
Right.
All the other games were super close.
They were.
And if the NHL doesn't see this and go, look, this is what we need. We want to do this every 4 years. We want to do Olympics every 4 years. So we just screw the all-star. I'm like, yeah,
Yeah.
this is so much better, right?
There's no appetite
So much better.
to watch,
Nah.
Sidney Crosby fire pucks from the 300 level to try to hit a
Nah.
target at center ice anymore. Like that gimmick
Nah.
has run its course, right? And talk about gimmicks that weren't gimmicks, the final, right? Let's talk about the Canada-US final. It had the hockey world abuzz. There was people that have never watched the game a day in their life were tuning in. There was a whole lot of weirdo political undertones that were in play in this game that really didn't have to be there, but they were. And I don't even want, I just want to skip over all that. I want to stay between the boards, stay between the whistles. Fast that game, the US is down, the US is up, they're tied again. Just, Kevin, from your standpoint watching that, what was your range of emotions, right? Canada had, like, it's almost like Canada needed that win more. The US was flying high. Yeah, the win would have, like, just set the US off. But Canada was like on pins and needles. Like, you guys were gonna like revolt if the US beat Canada in that game. And now you're down 2-1 in the third period. Just where were you at?
So I will go there first and foremost with the whole political thing. I think, was not proud to see either barn, whether it was Montreal or Boston, booing someone's national anthem. So
I will agree with that
first and
wholeheartedly.
foremost, like keep that between the boards and, everything else is noise. But with that being said, Canada's a very prideful organ is a country. Hockey is life up there. If we did not pull that out, I don't know what would happen, honestly. I mean, Canada definitely needed it more than what the US did. I think that game just it showed grit, determination. You got guys that they play in the same division against each other. You got Marner passing to Bennett to make that, game tying goal. My range of emotion was so up and down, and being here in the US and having US citizenship and kids that are born here still bleed, hockey red and white. I was on the edge of my seat. Binnington stood on his head in that overtime game. I might have had a few Labatts that night, and as much as I hated him, he beat the Bruins in that same building in game seven. I absolutely loved what he did in that, and that was one of those things where, if one doesn't go in, because the US came out flying, they were pounding the rock. Matthews had a ton of chances, and Binnington stood on his head, and just so happened that Canada was given an opportunity where you leave the best guy in the league wide open at the top of the slot, and he buried it,
You couldn't have scripted that better. It
No.
just ended the way it had to. It just did. The US winning that first game, and then Canada, and MacJesus scoring that goal. And Bennett, he stood on his head. You're right. The US was pressuring. And as a somewhat neutral, that's the type of game you want to watch. It was so entertaining. I would honestly wouldn't have really cared who won, but the way it went down, and the fact, don't forget, McDavid hasn't won anything. He hasn't won anything, but besides juniors, right? But you
Yeah.
go as a pro career, he hasn't won for Canada, hasn't won for Oilers, and for him to be able to do that at the end, you can see in his how he reacted, how what it meant to him. That's awesome, and I'm happy for you, Kevin, but screw you. Let's go.
Well, Sammy, I've wanted to ask you this question since I knew you were coming on and talking to us, and Kevin and I have talked about this already, but I'd like his thoughts on this from a coaching standpoint. I'm sure you've seen the replay of the goal a million times, and knowing how coaches look at the film, the first one or two times you're watching the pass and the shot and the goal. the rest of the time, if you're like me, you're wondering how the hell he got open in the slot wide open. And it's Auston Matthews blew defensive zone coverage. Can you break down, do you remember the play well enough to break down where 34, the centerman, should have been on that play, what he did wrong, and where the breakdown came from?
Sorry, no. I don't remember that one. But I will say this, though, that, well, first of all, 34, the best goal scorer you have. How many goals did you score this tourney?
Yeah, as many as he scores in the playoffs.
Zero.
Zero.
Yeah, no. But what he did do, he played a good two-way game. He was a good captain for that U.S. team. I'll give him that. Did he break down in that play? Okay, somebody did. And it's just sad that it comes down to one thing, right? It is. But that's the way it goes, right? I was impressed by Matthews from his hockey game. Because he, scoring or not, I mean, his job in Toronto is to score a million goals, right? Now he's the captain for a team that knew they couldn't win unless they played really structured. And he did that really, really well. I'm sorry, maybe he missed that coverage. I don't know who was out there. But yeah, you can't leave. It doesn't matter who it is in NHL. Wow. Anyone would have scored from that, right?
It's a pass that comes off the skate, no dusting off. It goes to the slot. You know, McDavid doesn't dust it off. It's a one-one right. touch, and you look at the play. I think Matthews, his defensive game is a lot better than what people give him credit for.
And that's what I'm trying to say.
As the puck rimmed around to the side, I think he was trying to make offense out of defense, and it just didn't happen. It happened too quick, and it was a gamble, and, you know, gamble with a guy that he's going to put the puck in the net if he's alone in the slot all day long. So the takeaway for that whole tournament, I would love to see, because it's tough to beat a team twice. Could Canada beat Sweden a second time? I don't know.
I don't know either.
I will Good even point. Say... Could Canada beat Finland? I mean, they let the door open. They were up 3 goals, and they made it a game with 1:16 left, and Crosby had to, you know, steal the freaking puck at the center ice line to put it in the empty cage. You know, I would love to see those teams play each other again, and who wins the second time? Who goes 2-0 against each other? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't see it. The beauty is that it won't take another 9 years, right? They'll play next year.
And then 2 years, we hit World Cup.
And then you're going to see these things again, because the NHL are not dumb, right? No, they're not dumb. They see this, and I read somewhere about the TV viewings was ridiculous for being hockey, right?
People tuned in. 9 million goal eyes across the two countries, I believe, is what the numbers were.
Yeah. So it had to be, let's be honest, had to be U.S. and Canada in the finals. As much as I would have hoped not, but it was the best for the game, and the way it was scripted. And it reminded, obviously, everybody, but, you know, 1980 U.S. Miracle on Ice, right? Miracle on Ice.
Miracle on Ice, yeah.
Yeah. But don't forget, that wasn't the final game. That was the semifinal.
Yeah.
Right? They still had to beat Finland in the finals.
Of all teams, right? The teams that didn't make it had to be Finland in the cup final.
Whether they did or not, I think people still remember that game. That, I think, is the takeaway from this tournament. I don't think people will remember who won. Everybody will remember that one game.
Yeah.
And then, hold on, Kev, the numbers, by the way, 9.3 was in the United States, 16 million viewers across the two countries.
That more people than there? There's got to be more than there are people in Canada.
No, we've got about 40. Record. 40 now, man.
I know. I was kidding. A lot of people.
Yeah. So my question was, though, too, like, Sammy, you being over in Europe, family over in Europe, does the game get the same recognition if it's played over there? We know the Europeans are going to watch the hockey, over there. They're going to watch it over here no matter what. But do you think you've been in the U.S. as long as I have, do you think it gets watched and the same buzz is what it was? Like,
so yes and no. Had Sweden and Finland been in the finals, it would have been a little different. But again, the NHL aren't dumb. The way they scheduled it, Sweden and Finland played on a Saturday at 1 p.m., which is prime time back there, right? So it was all scheduled really well, right? And the fact that U.S.-Canada went in the finals, the hardcore fans did watch it. Most people did not, because it's what, 2 in the morning, right? But, my brother watched it. 2 in the morning, he was up, because he just loves hockey, right? No, it was a success, and yeah, people back home are tuning in for sure, and we need more of this. Best on best. It's been way too long and went way too far in between. So I think everybody was happy that we finally got it done.
So moving forward then, do you think not the Olympics, the World Cup or whatever they call it, should it be here in North America versus having
That's your question.
Europe having a chance to host that, which they should, but
That's a good question. I haven't thought of it. They got to remember that this, if you want best on best, they're going to be all NHLers, right? So it kind of naturally becomes here. But if you go back, what was World Cup 96, I think,
it was
when they
here.
had the, it was, well, round robin was in
Yeah.
Europe. And
What
they
I am.
did this, yeah. I was there for the Finland Sweden game and Sweden Czech game in Stockholm. And then after that, they flew over and played, the final rounds in the US and Canada. Why not? That's a way of doing
That
it.
is a way to do it. Well,
That's a way of doing
and when you look at the what's happening with hockey recently, and I'd love your thoughts on this, Sammy and Kevin. So we just talked about 16 point something million viewers across the two countries in the Four Nations final, right? The Stanley Cup final, Florida, Edmonton, game seven last year had was actually the highest rated hockey game with 16.3 million viewers. So the last two big games on the ice have broken the records for most viewed. All the people talked about this game, all the social media posts about this game, people that never watched hockey before were talking about it. We talked about the NHL needed this and it worked and all that. Do you think that amongst us purists, the game is growing and this is awesome and this is great for the game and it's great for the game, period. But do you think that's going to have staying power, Sammy, with the fringe fans, or are they going to drop off once the regular season starts? You got to watch Buffalo, Ottawa next week and people are going to be like, eh, never mind, this sucks.
I wish that would be the case that you created all these new fans. I think reality is no. And I can use another sport to prove that, right? Soccer. US soccer team is really, really good. No one gives a rat ass for 3 years until the next World Cup comes around, right? And then everybody's a
Statement.
fan,
Yep.
right?
Now, hey, are we talking? Hang on. Women's U.S. soccer is very good.
Even men's. They are. Don't get me wrong. The US men's soccer team typically makes the final 32 when you go to the actual tournament. Because the way soccer works is that you have to play for 2 years in these qualifiers to actually make the final 32. And that's every 4 years. And the US typically makes it, and then everybody tunes in and they're soccer fans for about a month. And then for 4 years, no one gives a crap. Right? So I wish. But no, I'm sorry, I don't think so. You either are or you don't. I don't think this did create that much more. They want to look for the next big game. I was at the Lightning Oilers game 2 days ago. It wasn't more or less exciting than it was before that. It's a Tuesday night in February. So I would love to say yes, that this created so much more buzz. I don't think it did.
Could it
I don't want to be
create,
negative, but
well,
that.
no, but could it create an appetite, right? For let's see what playoffs are like. Because everyone says
So,
playoff hockey in the first round is the best experience, whether you have a pony
yes.
in the race, right? It is, there is 16 teams that are absolutely murdering each other for hopefully 7 games, but at least 4. So could it tilt the scale maybe for someone to tune in to late April, whether or not it's you're in that city or not?
I certainly hope so. And you're 100% right. I guess my point is that those call it casual fans, what do you want to call, they'll wait until April next year because that's what you want to see. The game is so, let's be real. It's two different sports, right? Between the regular season and the playoffs, between regular season and this type of tournament, right? Because this is the best on best. They went all in. Because you get these fans, they watch that US Canada game. They got those three fans. Every one of your friends who don't watch hockey saw that,
Yeah.
right?
Right.
If not on YouTube. So now you tune in to the next regular season game on a Tuesday. And if that's not happening, you're like, I guess that was a one off. But I'm sure they will tune in next time the US Canada plays in the Olympics and whatever. So sure, hopefully we did build that, right? And that's
Well,
what we've been missing. Right, because there is a difference between a club team and your national team,
correct.
right? The
Well,
national pride, it means so much. right? And when things go 9 years, they don't even play. And then when they do, and something like that happens, yeah, they'll tune in next time for sure.
Yeah, and you made the comp, and soccer has, to your point, 100% agree with you. But what it took multiple years of the World Cup, right? The US women's won the World Cup, and then the men, they were up on Portugal until Ronaldo scored the game tying goal in the 93rd minute in Foxborough a couple years ago to basically reseed them and kind of knock them out. Like, there was those moments that made fans, the casual fan, pay more attention. And then it slowly grows the game at the local level, right? The second tier local club teams, Sammy, they start getting more viewership, and then the MLS gets bigger, and then there's more stars that play there, and then more people watch those. So it slowly grows. And where this all starts is where I'm going with all this. This 100% did for hockey at the youth level. It restarted the turbines of pumping kids into the, like, I know it has. I guarantee you, there were so many kids that were all in on this, which what Ray Bourque did for, or I'm sorry, what Bobby Orr did for hockey in the Boston area in the 70s, when he just brought it to the front forefront, and they built all the rinks, and the kids all signed up, and everyone went and played, and the game exploded. That, 1980, keep going with all that, right? This tournament, not that Canada needs help with kids playing hockey, and frankly, the US doesn't either. However, I heard on another podcast that the lack of rec hockey is ruining the sport of hockey at the youth level, because everything's competitive from the time you're 6 years old. Can this get more, the more bodies you put in, the more development shows up, the more coaches are involved, the more you grow the game at the youth level? Maybe this is going to be good to help change the game so that it can just, at the youth level, it can go back to being the development game and the fun, and then let the elite kids be elite, and let the competition happen, and let's grow the game, and let's get more AAA teams and AA teams and single A teams, whatever you want to call it. But if anything, let's pump more kids into the system, and tournaments like this absolutely help that.
All right, I'll buy into that. I do agree with that because you can look at Tampa after they won in 04. There are more rinks today. There are more kids playing today. Yes, that's how you grow the game. I think there's a reason why there's less of that in South Florida because they haven't had the success, right? So sure, I'll buy into that.
I think.
Well, and to that point, and Kev,
Well,
sorry, well,
yeah.
to that point, they won last year. Gretzky's building the rink in Boca, which is relatively in that, like, so you can
There
see,
you
to
go.
your point, now that they're starting to have it, it's starting to take off. Kev,
There you
I'm
go.
sure you're going to say the exact same thing, Kevin.
Yeah, well, that and the fact that Dylan Larkin actually said, he goes, I think the biggest thing for US hockey is for those NHLers that do not make the playoffs or get bounced in the first round, they need to go over and represent the US in the World Championship. And I think they have struggled more with stars declining to not go, whether it's injury or personal preference. But I know from a Canadian side, if they have an opportunity to be able to go and represent and put the maple leaf on their crest and play, it's the second tournament in the world, we'll say, during that time, because the Stanley Cup is what the chalice everyone wants to go in for. But you look at Sweden, you look at Finland, you look at the Czechs, you look at every, like, they get stacked if their guys are available. And the US, this is what Larkin said, and I'm, paraphrasing. Hopefully they see what it means to play for the US, and that's going to be huge moving forward because that's what you need. You need guys that go and represent your country. And I'm not saying the US did not represent, but like they are so close to being the superpower when it comes to the big game, not juniors. The juniors approved it. They're back-to-back junior champions. It's going to be interesting how the tide is going to change, down the road. And I know that's never been an issue with Sweden or Finland, right, Sammy? I mean, they you
No, the World Championships, thanks for bringing that up. That's always in May, right? So it's the middle of the playoffs. When I grew up, kids that play hockey, their dream was to play the World Championships. No one said, I want to go play the NHL, because we didn't have it on TV back in the day, right? So we didn't, if we wanted to see how the result, we had to watch it in a newspaper the next day, right? And there were maybe a handful of our stars that went over, whereas the goal was to play for your country, right? And that was the dream. Nowadays is obviously a little different, but you're right though. When the World Championships comes around, it's not the AHLers, I mean, the Swedish and Finnish, oh, and the Russians, Ovechkin always goes if he has a chance, right? Because he wants to go represent his country. So, no, that's big. This one coming around will be a lot more important for the Canadians and the Americans also, and those typical Swedish and Finns that get hurt because they're, long season. I may not want to go, but it's a precursor for the Olympics, right? If you're not go, if you get invited and you don't go, you may be overlooked for the Olympics, right? So that's going to help hugely. The fact that NHL is letting the NHL players play in the Olympics is huge, and that will boost, the national teams for the other tournaments, right? So, no, I agree with you. That I guess what I'm saying, but yeah, in Europe, that is still the main tournament. People tune in, right?
2 years ago, man, I remember when Finland won. It was huge.
They did. Oh man, I did not have a strong team. They just play the right way. You look at the parade in Helsinki after a game like that, there's 100,000 people, like half the population is out there. And that's world championships that no one in the US and Canada tunes into, right? It's just so much bigger over there, right? So you're right. If you can get more of the Canadian and the US, stars to actually go, that just makes it more interesting. And again, the Olympics can help because you got to kind of prove yourself to make that roster.
Absolutely. So, Four Nations, Olympics, World Championships, Junior Championships, the best on best is here. The pride support is only going to get bigger and better. I think, from your point, the big games are going to see the fans, and it's going to be exciting to see as this continues on what the NHL, what the International Committee, what the players, the PAs, and all that choose to do moving forward. Either way, I am here for it. Give it to me. I want it in buckets. Sammy, appreciate your time in the nest today, buddy. Great insight as always on the international game, on the Four Nations. You're a beauty, bud. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys.
Absolutely. Kevin, we come back. We're going to some NHL playoff talk and some USPHL playoff talk next in the nest. Welcome back, everybody. We wanted to touch on a little bit of an NHL recap since it's been a minute since we talked to NHL, considering the Four Nations that we just had a great conversation with Sammy Tarrell on interrupted our regularly scheduled NHL viewing. But we are back. It's the second half of the season. And unlike Connor McDavid, who says he's having a tough time transitioning back to the NHL after the Four Nations tournament, I am fully ready to get back into the NHL, Kev. And with that being said, let's start in the East. Let's start with the playoff picture. The Washington Capitals, Alex Ovechkin, 12 goals away from breaking Wayne Gretzky's all-time goal scoring record, 84 points, leading the class of the Eastern Conference. What do you make of the NHL Eastern Conference playoff race, big guy?
Washington, just silent assassins this year. When you think about what they did last year, right? Like just, creeping into the playoffs, they lose four straight to the Rangers. You think about the experience some of the young guys on that team got from those four games. And, again, just I did not have them picked in the top three or five of the league coming into the year. But yet they just are steady Eddie, lunchbox. They seem to get her done. And Ovi, let's talk about Ovi. I mean, people were talking about next year being the year that he may or may not break Gretzky's scoring record. And here we are. He's what, 11 away from tying, 12 away
That's
from
right.
winning. Watched the game on Sunday, saw that he got the Hattie. I mean, he's healthy. He looks fresh. He's getting chances. Like he could have had two or three other goals during that game that he just missed on. So, it's exciting to sit and see that we're going to see history. It may be this year. Hopefully, it is this year. If not next, I didn't think Gretzky's record would be broken, but it's fun to watch, man. I'm excited and can't wait to see, how this all entails. But as far as the rest of the Eastern Conference, and I'm gonna go with our Boston Bruins. This might be the first April or May that we're not watching hockey, but they're not looking good. A week and a half away or a week away now from trade deadline, it'll be interesting to see what the boys up in the front office decide to do. But yeah, not looking good. Really loving to see what's happening with Detroit, with Columbus. The outdoor game is coming on up. I think when that outdoor game was set, I don't think anyone in this world thought that the game would really mean anything this time of year, and the hockey gods prevailed. That's 1-2 as far as the wild card goes, sitting today, both at 58 games, and the Jackets only 2 points behind the Red Wings. So a lot of fun stuff here to happen in the last month and a half, you know, almost 2 months of regular season, and I'm excited. You know, this is the time I really tune in, and this is when hockey's hockey.
Absolutely. And Alex Ovechkin, just to kind of put it in perspective, so they're at 53 games. He's only played 42. He missed 9 games this season. He's sitting at 30 goals over 42 games. So if you do all the numbers, he's on pace for about 52 goals for the season. That puts him 2 goals shy, 1 goal shy of tying and 2 goals shy of breaking the record, right? So based on the number of games they have left, you look at it and you say, oh, he only needs 12 and he's got 24 games left. No brainer. Well, he's, for as hot as he's been lately, you know, he still only has 5 goals in 5 games. That's a goal a game, but they came, like you said, the hat trick followed by a 1 goal performance, but the two before that were zeros, right? So if he goes a couple more without, you know, a zero on the board, then those numbers get smaller. The emotion and the pressure gets higher. And then even though it's, you know, I'm going to say a record, not a Stanley Cup, he's still going to try harder. His teammates are going to be forcing the puck to him to try to get him that record. And usually when that happens, you tend to drop off, not pick it up, right? Like, that's why it always takes so long to get the one more you need to get there, because everybody's trying to get it for you and everyone's trying their best to make it go through you to get it. And typically it you know, takes longer to come. Eventually it does, but it takes a little longer. So it's going to be a sight to see. And I don't know, Kevin, I haven't dove this far into it. It is across the board goals, right? Not regular season versus playoffs. So if they go on a deep run, he's going to have 7, 14, 21, 28, you know, more opportunities depending on how many rounds they go this year. And if he's 2 goals shy going into the first round of the playoffs, he could break it in game 3 or 4 of their first round series. And then, you know, all of it comes to fruition. So the chances of him doing it in this season, whether it's the regular or the playoff season, but in this calendar year before the Stanley Cup is handed out, I would say it's pretty damn high. And as much as, you know, the hockey purist in me says that Gretzky's records would or should never be broken, the fact that a guy like Ovechkin continues, you know, at 39 years old, realistically 2, 3, 4 seasons left based on the age of some of the greats that have come before him that have had the longevity, I mean, he's going to set the standard. And he's going to be the guy we talk about no one's ever going to catch moving forward. And that's crazy to think there was another one like Gretzky when it comes to putting the puck in the net.
Yeah, and you think about when he started, right? In the air quote dead puck era, where, you know, goals were not nearly as plentiful as what they are today. You know, he's a machine. You know, health, that's one thing that he's had throughout his career. You look at the games that he missed this year, he broke his leg and yet he's back. Like, the Russian tank is unbelievable. He's a pure goal scorer. Like him or don't like him, you have to respect the game. And, you know, he's going to at least have 4 more games in the playoffs to try and break that record. The key is, though, if I'm Washington, you want to get that circus taken care of before going into, you know, mid-April, early May. So no one's focusing on, you know, number 8 trying to break that record. But yeah, it'd be pretty neat, I think, if it did happen in the playoffs. You know, I know, you know, when Gretzky broke Howe's record, they stopped the game and everyone celebrated. It'd be interesting to see, you know, would that happen if the Caps are down, you know, 3-1 and they bury it, he buries a 3-2 goal to make it within you know, one striking distance. Do you stop that momentum because of the achievement, or do you, you know, highlight that later on? That would be pretty neat to see. We'll see. Who knows? And, yeah, you know, based on what's going on, man, there's a very good chance that they could be playing our Bruins if we do squeak into the playoffs. So wouldn't that be fun?
It would not be fun. Not only would it not be fun, I mean, Washington has always been the Achilles heel of the Boston Bruins through this whole run, even during the Stanley Cup and 11, all the run through the 2010s into the 2020s. Whenever we would come across Washington in the playoffs, the Bruins, it would absolutely be the detriment to it's like the Winnipeg Jets versus the Los Angeles Kings. Like, no business beating the juggernaut of Winnipeg, and then they go up there and they win in 6 and send the top dog Jets home. Like, every team has that Achilles heel. For the Bruins, it is the Washington Capitals. But Kev, I'm gonna make a late February prediction here that we're not going to have to worry. We're going to be worried more about what ping pong ball gets picked for the Boston Bruins than we are what team they're going to face in the first round. Because, you know, looking at the standings right now, right, we talked about it, the Atlantic Division, which is where the Bruins reside, is, I can't even say the powerhouse of the East, because the Metro, the top three teams in the Metropolitan, top four teams in the Metropolitan are all ahead of the Boston Bruins. And then they're sixth in the Atlantic Division, the Bruins are. And the likes of the Tampa Bay Lightning, which last time we broke down NHL playoffs, had like six games in hand, and they were still ahead of the Boston Bruins. Now they're closing the gap. They still have two games in hand on Florida, one game in hand on two in the Bruins still, and they're 8 points ahead. So the top three spots in the Atlantic Division are out of touch for the likes of the Boston Bruins, the Ottawa Senators, the Montreal Canadiens. They're all vying for that third playoff spot, the second wild card spot. Sorry, the Columbus Blue Jackets currently hold that spot. The New York Rangers, hello New York, dregs of the Eastern Conference. Last time we talked in mid-January, are now 2 points out of the second and final wild card, ahead of the Senators, ahead of the Bruins, ahead of the Canadiens, ahead of the Flyers. So they've gone a run, which you called. One team goes on a run, they're going to jump the standings. Everything's so close. The Bruins just gave up two easy points to Toronto the other night, 3-goal lead, surrendered it in the third, lost in overtime, got the one loser point. But that second point would right now have them in solo third, or I say third in the wild card, first spot out. Instead, they're mired in the muck in the middle. The one thing I can say, sorry for all of you that I've mentally twisted your brain around that are still listening, is we're going to have a hell of a playoff run through the early spring in the Eastern Conference, because there are no less than six teams that are solidly in the mix right now, which trade deadlines around the corner, that's going to make for some fun times too.
Yeah, I mean, okay. So Tampa, right? They're on a six-game heater right now. You know, Detroit's on a two-game heater. The Leafs on a three-game heater. We're on a two overtime loss heater. And Ottawa's on a five-game losing streak. They lose tonight. That's going to be extremely tough for them. But I'm with you, man. We're outside looking in. We are peeking through the curtain, just trying to see if we can get on stage. And, as we sit right now, it's not looking good. We're not the second act. We're not the third act. We are the ones that are starting in the morning dress rehearsal. I'm not confident in the front office of the Bruins based on past experiences on how they handle things. But as we know, I can be wrong.
Well, let me ask you the Kevin Trussler opinion of experience. There's been rumors floating around that Team Canada star and Boston Bruins captain Brad Marchand is on the trading block out of Boston. Or maybe it's that teams are calling and inquiring about if he's on the trading block in Boston. All I know is that Don Sweeney and Cam Neely have not come out and said absolutely not. So do you think there's a chance that Brad Marchand, the guy everyone hates until he played for Canada, and then half of North America realized that this guy's pretty damn good and they want him on his team, on their team, do you think there's a chance that he gets moved?
My heart says no, but at the end of the day, it's a business. And, you know, when you see guys like Bork and Gretzky get moved, and you can make your team better and younger, if I'm any team that feels they have a chance to go on a run, I'm calling about 63, plain and simple. People hate him, but I promise you'll love him when he's on your squad. At this point, you know, I don't know how much tread is left in those tires, at least with the Bruins. I'm not saying that we have a full rebuild ahead of us, but, you know, we've got some work to do. And it depends on if he waives whatever no trade clause that he has. You know, anything's possible. Would it surprise me?
I would agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, it would, you know, from a Bruin fan. But I would love to see him land on a team with some of the folks that I've talked to over the years that say they absolutely hate him. And then we'll see, how that turns around rather quickly.
He'd be a nice grit piece for the Tampa Bay Lightning, wouldn't he?
I mean, are you kidding me? He shorthanded goals. The guy plays all facets of the game. He may not be on your power play because of what you have. But, yeah, I mean, he would be an asset in any team's organization that has a chance to win. I mean, God forbid I even say the Leafs, right? Could you imagine?
Well, the last thing the Leafs need is another forward. You know, this one has a little more defensive mining capabilities, but that team needs back end help every year, not upfront help, right? But to your point, would they do it? Absolutely. I think the issue is going to be within the division. The places I could think of him going, you know, which are so just lather me in Zamboni water, man. And like, it's just going to be a hell of a good time. Like, imagine him up there with, you know, lined up next to Matthew Tkachuk in Florida, you know, down in Sunrise. Or like I said, up on the second line in Tampa, backing up Jake Guentzel and Braden Point down there, you know, like right behind Kucherov, like just adding that, or on Kucherov's line and adding that grit to which he's used to playing with a player like Pasternak, right? Put him with Kucherov and watch what he can do there. And then go out west. You know, I know Edmonton's needs are historically goaltending and defense, and that hasn't changed. But after the way he got along with the likes of those superstars, the Canadian superstars in that tournament, you easily, all these GMs, the one thing about this tournament that we just talked about with Sammy is all these GMs can see how that player fits in with their superstars because they all played together. GM that has a superstar that needs a new player saw how Marchand fit in with those guys, fit in with McDavid, fit in with Marner, and you could absolutely make the case of going, I know this guy will work because I just saw it happen.
Well, and the thing is, like I've heard people say specifically during the Four Nations, well, he's just not fast enough. He's not fast enough. Well, the NHL is not the Four Nations. It's not the freaking, you know, Formula One track meet that we saw. And I think anyone that's watched NHL since the Four Nations realizes that the skill level, there's a drop off. You know, you have the best players in the world on four teams competing against each other. That's a track meet that is not going to be met anywhere else. You put him in a spot where he can plug and play and, you know, kill penalties. He wins board battles all the time. I mean, proven leader, a proven guy that people want in the locker room. I'd love to see him get another cup. You know, obviously would love to see it with the black and gold, but, you know, take the goggles off. I don't see them competing anytime soon. I think they have a lot of pieces that they need. And, you know, it would help our organization if they were able to move him and get some pieces in return to hopefully get them back to where they need to be. But yeah, how about, hey, Colorado? Could you imagine him with, you know, that squad? Unbelievable.
Go do the same thing Bork did in 01, right? Go over there, win your cup. And then, you know, he's 36 years old, Marchand is, and he's talked about retiring as a Boston Bruin. So he may not waive a clause. He may tell Neely and Sweeney that he wants to stay in the black and gold and not even, you know, kind of worry about chasing a second cup. And I don't think, to your point, it's going to be in Boston if he does stay. His contract expires at the end of the year. The salary cap is supposed to jump next year or the year after. Yeah. So there's room to extend him. But the other side of this is, as every organization struggles, we're back to the Stammer conversation that we had all the way back early spring or late spring, early summer last year. He gives you everything he's got. You look at a guy like that and you go, there's no way we're going to get rid of him. We can't get rid of him. He's the heart and soul of the team. We got to keep him. But he's going to want 4 or 5 years. Are you going to lock in 4 times 7, 5 times 6 with a guy like Marchand at 36, 30, undersized for as good as he is and as ratty as he is, to use the term everyone uses in the NHL?
And durable. I mean, he's been durable too, right? I mean,
he is.
Yep.
But are you going to get into that David Backes contract? That contract handcuffed the Bruins for years after their cup run, right? And like six times six, I believe they gave Backes, and they paid 4 of those years for him sitting on the couch. Like,
yeah.
It's just, you can't do it. So you've got to look at that too. And every team does. And if you take Marchand on as a rental, are you looking to then sign him, or are you looking to just use him and go? And then you've given up, he's a first round draft pick, you know, compensation guy. So you're going to get a first. So you're going to give up a first to get Brad for
though?
A couple months, right? Oh,
is
absolutely.
I would
especially
hope
what he showed
so.
In the Four Nations. He is.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, I would hope so. But, you know, you might get a couple seconds and you know, a third liner for him. I don't know. You know, I'd like to think all of our Boston Bruins are worth first round draft capital. But the reality is, you know, like you said, it's the tread on the tires. So.
Yeah, exactly.
You know.
But if I'm the Bruins, though, I'd rather get rid of, and you're not going to get the same back. I'd rather get rid of, I said this before, get rid of, let's clean up Pavel Zacha's locker. Can we find someone to take Elias Lindholm on the front line? I mean, we absolutely, that was a completely, I hate to say botched signing because he showed that he should have been productive, but just another one of these players that come to Boston that just absent, can't do anything on the ice. You know, the Lindholm we want is poor guy's been hurt for half the season. He's out the rest of the season. McAvoy's out the rest of the season. You've got no back end to help. Swayman needs a reset. Like, the whole, just blow it up, man. We just got to start over up in Beantown. And I don't want to lose the guys like Trent Frederick or Patra, you know, younger guys that are earning their way up, because those are the guys that are going to get you somewhere down the road. I'm not saying I want to get rid of Marchand, like, just to get rid of him. But at this point, I'm kind of open. Like, let's do something different, because holding on through the Berge years and the Krejci years and the Chara years to get those guys a second cup, I was all in for. We should have had a second cup.
We should have.
Should have been our year.
Yep.
We got,
yep.
We lost that one, right? And then 20 COVID year, we were the best in the league, got knocked out in the bubble. The year after, we get knocked out to Florida. Like, we should have had a second cup in that run. Those guys are all gone. And then now you're trying to build with Marchand driving the bus. And it's just not going to happen with the group you have. You've got to start to reset that. And if he's the first piece that's got to go, then don't botch the return. Picks 13, 14, and 15. And let's see if we can't rebuild anything.
Yeah. No, with Lindholm, hey, tough, man. Injuries, right? That's the, you can't make the club in the tub, so to speak. So, you know, you got to be available. And that's part of the sports. And, you know, what happened to McAvoy and the Four Nations, it sucks. You know, that was one thing that we said before the Four Nations started. You know, if you lose a blue chip piece of your team, that's going to hurt, and it's a domino effect. And, you know, you put McAvoy and Lindholm, that's 1A, 1B as far as your top guys. So Lauri looks good, man. I'm a big Lauri. I think he's just got to work on some defense.
He's not turning the puck over at the blue line.
Hey, it's, you know what? It'll come. But he's special. He could have won that game against the Leafs. He had a heck of a chance. Leafs tender
stood
on his
head. Because he turned it over at the blue line for a breakaway in three zone breakaway that Swayman stopped. So
hey,
I swear at you, every time he turns it over.
I know, but he's young. And, you know, defensemen don't really catch their stride until they're late 20s, right? So, you know, the fact that
Carter Tressler on that blue line. He's not going to turn that over.
Foot speed. But yeah, like, here's the thing, though. He's got the actual want. And, you know, you can't instill that. Like, he needs someone of defensively sound to cover with him. And, you know, I'd rather have his upside than some of the others, you know. Although, yeah, is it Slavin?
From Carolina.
My gosh, what a coming out party that guy had. I mean,
Jacob Slavin, man.
It is what,
buddy.
His game is just fundamentally sound. It's fun to watch. Yeah, you know, he fits Carolina's mold, the Rod the Bod, you know. That's his type of style. Two-way hockey, solid, take care of the back end first. But, you know, going off track, I'm with you. If the pieces for Marchand are there, as painful as it would be to trade away your captain and a guy that has, you know, look, his antics throughout the year, I may not have agreed with in certain areas, playing the game and knowing what it takes to get under the other team's skin. He's a special guy, and he's a winner. The dude's a winner. Whether you like it or not, whoever's listening to it, I would call your GM in your city and say, what do we need to do to get 63? Because he can help you win, plain and simple.
Absolutely. Jacob Slavin, by the way, 30 years old. He's got 10 years left in this league as a solid defenseman and will win a cup. Carolina will win a cup at some point, and he will be a starring piece there for sure.
Hey, honest broker, did you know he was American?
No.
No,
nope, not at all. Not until I saw him out there, and then I didn't care about him until late in that tournament when all of a sudden you realize when he was on the ice, there was nothing going to happen. He locked down McDavid and Crosby and those guys so well the whole time. So absolutely phenomenal. March 7th trade deadline, and the stomp to the playoffs continues. It'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out over the coming weeks. And we will absolutely break down where everyone falls out after the trade deadline passes. And we'll see how far the likes of the Boston Bruins are outside of a playoff spot when we get to that point. Kev, I need a deep breath after yelling about the Bruins roster. When we come back, let's get into junior hockey and touch base on that before we wrap things up here in the Nest. We just talked about NHL playoffs. Another playoffs that you and I are both very interested in is the USPHL playoffs, both Elite, Premier, and to be honest, I'm sure NCDC is starting. I don't follow the NCDC level as much, the tier two arm of the USPHL. Follow the tier three arm very closely, of course. My son playing on the Dells Ducks, your son being the captain of the Tampa Bay Juniors. Playoffs are here, and let's start with you in the Florida division of the USPHL Elite side of the house. The Tampa Bay Juniors, number one team in the division in both Premier and Elite, actually. So great season for both teams down there in Wesley Chapel. What is the, I know every division's got a different structure. What can we expect coming out of the Florida division, and what's your, you know, try to take off the streamer and homer hat a little bit, but what do you think it looks like down in the Florida division on the Elite side and honestly the Premier side this year?
Now, hey, the biggest difference this year is they changed the format completely down here in the Florida division. It's now a double elimination bracket playoff, where the past couple of years it's been, you know, 1 versus 4, 2 versus 3, and it's the best 2 games out of 3. And, you know, if both teams, whoever wins both those series, they move on to nationals. This year they've changed it. They've expanded the Elite division. So now it's the best double elimination bracket. So, you know, you lose 2, you're gone. You win, you move on. It could come down to playing 1, 2, 3, 4 games, possibly 5 overall, to win your division. And what
so
I like
a double it's a true it, I'm sorry it's a true yeah. double elimination. It's not a bracket series style
no
tournament.
It is
really
double,
okay. I was unaware of that change.
Yeah, double elimination. So you lose your first game, you've got to take the long road to the final. You know, if you win all your games, then obviously you got an easier way to the final. But, you know, playoff hockey is playoff hockey. You know, I don't care where anyone is seated going into the tournament. You have to bring your A game, because, you know, every game matters. And I know that's cliche, but, you know, everyone starts the playoffs 0-0. Doesn't matter, you know, if you were the 1 or the 8 seed. We've seen it in the pros. We've seen the number 8 seed get on a heater and run it all the way through. You know, the biggest difference here is if you have a hiccup, if you are a top seed, and you have a hiccup in game 1, well, now you know, you're fighting for your life the rest of the way. And, you know, we've always said game 1s in tournaments, no matter what age, that is the, you know, you're going to see everyone's best. Everyone's hyped. Everyone wants to win that game, because it does put you in the driver's seat. So, you know, it's a long road ahead. Tampa's got 1 more game left in the Elite level this Saturday. Right now, as it stands, I think they are at the top of the power rankings in the entire league. They lose that game, that could potentially, you know, drop them down. And the importance of being number 1 in the power rankings is you have a chance to still earn a wild card spot into the playoffs. From what I've been told, I think you still have to make it to the final within your division lead to qualify for that. So it's not like you are qualified going into the playoffs and, you know, that playoff doesn't matter. So, you know, as I've said to my son, it's like, hey, great job so far in the regular season. Close it out. Hopefully you know, everyone brings the A game on Saturday and you are the number 1 seed, but it stops there. It goes back to 0-0, and, you know, you win, you move on, you lose, it's over. So,
well, and the Tampa Bay Juniors Elite squad is the number 1 seed, and the regular season USPHL Elite winner for the entire league was 73 points overall. Tampa Bay Juniors have clinched the number 1 overall regular season championship. 234 goals for, 89 goals against, a +145. The best goal differential in the Elite Conference by about 30 plus goals, only second to Wilkes-Barre Scranton. And we saw them in person. I know they've had some ups and downs this year, but they, you know, they have got heck of a road ahead of them. They look good. I've seen them play some of the teams that the Tampa Bay Juniors play with mixed success. So it'll be interesting when all this shakes out, see who gets out of their division, see who gets to Nationals, which is in Wayne, New Jersey this year, I believe, not up in Utica, if I recall correctly.
Yep.
So see who gets to New Jersey and see where the chips fall when real best of the best in the Elite division get together and start playing. But the Florida division, will be a force to be reckoned with, just like they were last year up at Nationals when everyone gets together. And it'll be interesting to watch. And Kev, when does that, since they've got games this weekend, I'm guessing they don't kick off till next weekend in their playoff run?
It'll be a week this Friday. So next Friday is when the playoffs start here in Florida. Thankfully, it's actually in the Wesley Chapel area where the Tampa Juniors home barn is this year. Yeah, it starts Friday. If all goes well, I think they play the 10 a.m. game, and then, you know, the chips are up in the air after that. We'll see how the team does, and we'll go from there.
And the Junior Blades, you know, the Eels are second. The Junior Blades have got into third, and the Typhoon from Palm Beach got in at the fourth spot. Our buddy and former Nest guest, Cooper Christensen, plays on the Junior Blades, and he talked about their team needing to put some stuff together to make the playoffs and go on a run, and they've had a hell of an end of the season. I know that they'll come playoff time. All these teams know each other so well. There is absolutely no surprise, let's say, when a lower-ranked team upsets a higher-ranked team in this division when the chips are on the table, because it's happened before.
Yeah, I think the big thing, at least on the elite level, like Tampa, Florida Eels, and the Florida Blades, those are locked in 1, 2, 3. There is still a three-way battle for that last playoff spot in the
elite. I see that now. I missed that. Yeah. Okay, you're right. The games are not even. I didn't see that, Kevin. Thank you for that.
So yeah, there's a lot to still be had, at least for that fourth spot. And you know, from a premier perspective, not to jump over, but at least for the Florida division, because the Palm Beach Typhoon premier team had folded, they have a play-in game for that fourth seed on the Thursday next week. And then, you know, once that is settled, then the same tournament goes on, just like the elite, where it's a double elimination bracket. So
interesting. I'm looking at the premier standings and the Junior Blades, the Battalion, there's a lot of games left to be played, most likely because of that. And they're not going to have all the games played because they lost those games against the Typhoon that folded. So yeah, there's X's next to everybody's name, which signifies they all made the playoffs. But to your point, the play-in game to figure out who gets it between, looks like Atlanta and Florida. I think you just said that, right? So
yep. It
should be interesting to see what that looks like. Yeah, for sure. On the Premier side, though, staying on the Premier side, the Vernal Oilers completed the feat.
Dude.
44 games played, 44 wins, 44-0, and plus 337 in goal differential.
Like, I don't
care. Insanity.
I don't care what league you're in. That is just incredible. I mean,
correct.
You know, I had the pleasure of being able to see them last year in Nationals. They actually were on the same flight that we had to. It wasn't Utica. It was up into somewhere in New York. But
Albany, I believe you guys flew.
It was too. Albany. Yeah. Thank you. Great organization. Great kids. They were very respectful. To see what they've done this year, you know, I don't know much about that part of the country as far as how the divisions go and everything, but I know on any given day, you're undefeated. Everyone wants a chance to knock you off the pedestal, and be able to do what they've done. To me, just, it doesn't make sense. It's unbelievable.
And you look at the second team in their division and the Seattle Totems, and poor Totems, their campaign would be better than any coach would even ask for. They went 40-4, and their four losses were to Vernal in their division, and they still finished plus 279 goal differential. And you're the second place team that has to go through Vernal to make it out to Nationals, and they are the second team stated in the wild card ranking. So if you played that division out the way, you know, the odds makers would play it, Vernal wins that division, Seattle finishes second behind Vernal, and then they still make it to Natty's on that wild card spot, right? I mean, you look at the numbers, and I'm not trying to throw shade on any team, because you got to play the games in front of you, and you got to put teams together to play. The second half of that division, top four in that division, made the playoffs. The fourth place team is minus 185 in goal differential. They go down from there, even worse as far as records go. You know, looking at it, that division just on paper, and I didn't watch their games, they started 10 o'clock at night. That division on paper does not look strong top to bottom. That looks top heavy. And it looks like and I've seen some of the Vernal scores, you know, they're double digits every game against a lot of those teams. So why is that important? Well, again, when you go to the best on best and you start playing the likes of Fresno, of the Metro Jets, of, you know, the Minnesota Squatch or the River Kings, the Islanders. You know, Fort Wayne this year has a great year up in the Midwest Division. And then Tampa Bay Juniors, right? Like you go and play those teams and Nationals, all of a sudden those games are real. Then I want to see what, you know, what, because as we all know, I'm gonna use this term, a soft schedule sometimes doesn't harden the steel when the steel needs to be hardened. Whereas a team that's the Metro Jets, a 1-point win in their division over the Toledo Cherokee, that's, and then the Columbus is right behind them. That's going to be a battle through that division to get out of that division, right? So are those teams better off? Is a team like Tampa better off to play when it's nut cutting time versus a team that cakewalked? And not all their games were easy. They played Metro this year. It was a 1-goal win. It was a great game. Watch the whole thing. It was phenomenal hockey. Is that going to be enough to have them be battle tested when push comes to shove?
Hey, cream rises to the top. Cliche, big time right there, right?
Big
but,
time.
Hey, you can't fault the team for the schedule that they had. And I don't know enough about the showcases that they did and who they played. But again, you have 44 chances to beat a team that has a 0-loss record. As a coach, you want some losses. I think losses build character, and it also knocks some of the entitlement that might be going on. I don't know what that room is like. I don't know what that organization is like, but you know, you're going in 44-0. That's a great feat, no doubt. But you go into the playoffs and lay an egg, then it becomes nothing. So, you know, I hope they make it to Nationals. I'd like to see them play against the best of the best and see where they really stack, but time will tell, you know?
Yeah, and you know, I want to make it clear, if anybody's listening from out west, we're not throwing shade on the Vernal Oilers at all. They've played tough teams. They played Fresno, who won their division out in the Pacific, and were in 1- and 2-goal games against Fresno, winning, of course, all of them. I mentioned the Metro Jets game. That was a 1-goal win in that showcase. A 1-goal win over the Fort Wayne Spacemen, who won the Midwest Division. So they've played the tops of other divisions throughout this season, and won those close games. So that would tell me that when it becomes best on best in the playoffs, they are prepared to make that jump and play, and they should have that chip on their shoulder to be the best. They've been the best all season. Can they continue it into the playoffs? And I will tell you right now, I will be watching Premier playoffs this year. I want to see what Vernal can do. I want to see what that looks like. I mean, I'll be watching Elite playoffs too. Let's be honest. I'm junky about this stuff. But I will absolutely be tuned in and see what they can do. I have no vested interest in the Vernal Oilers, but there is something cool about potentially, you know, having a rooting interest and watching a team go 60-0 or whatever it takes to win that.
Yeah, or more importantly, they lose a game. How do they respond?
Right? Because the Natties is not one and done. You can lose that seeding round in a game and then still go on. So, yeah, you're 100% right. You know, and just to put a bow on it, Premier side of the house. The North Division, where, you know, I'm well versed. The Minnesota Squatch won that division. The Wisconsin Rapids River Kings were right there with them. That's a full out 3-round division this year. 1v8, right, and then they reseed, play the semifinals, and then play the finals. That's going to be a battle. The Dells Ducks are in for it. You know, they're in the mix. They're in that 4-5 matchup. But the top teams in that division are solid. I think whoever comes out of that division, because of the battles they're going to have to go through, are going to be a force to reckon with in Natties. And that's the type of division, knowing the North Division the way I do, knowing like the Midwest Division, that's the type of division that could go bring it to a team like Vernal. They're going to be gritty. They're going to be sized. They're going to be physical. They're going to not take any crap. And who knows, maybe Vernal does the same thing, right? Like I said, at 10 PM games, I'm not watching all of them, but those are the type of teams that go in against, I mean, Bruins, Florida, right? Bruins, St. Louis, a skilled team. You go in, you punch them in the mouth once or twice, and then you end up coming out with a W. So it'll be interesting to watch, and I'm all here for it.
Yeah, no, I remember the Squatch last year, seeing them in Nationals. They were a gritty, gritty team. And, you know, not surprised that they're at the top of the bracket in that division again this year. That's the beauty of playoff hockey, right? We'll see what happens. There could be a Cinderella story coming.
We'll see what happens. And speaking of Cinderella stories, thanks for listening to another episode of the Greasy Pigeon Podcast. Kevin, enjoy the start of the playoffs. Good luck with everything. We'll talk to you about all things USPHL, NHL, and everything else in the hockey world next time. Later. Cheers.
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.